Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That war rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Hark Presents War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims, and with me, as always, the Merrymaker himself, Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you tonight?
My nose is so bright that you could even say it glows. That's how I'm doing.
Matt, can we do another take of that where you sound less enthused?
Look, I'm tired. I'm trying my best. But I'm trying to be as jolly as I can. And I am, in fact, jolly. I hope you are, Chris. I hope you're doing well tonight.
I am doing quite well. I am excited about the show.
We've got a great one.
Yeah, it is. I'm going to warn everybody right now. It's going to get political. And I am not joking.
But it is part and parcel of the interview because our guest is Sam Humphries, the writer of Citizen Jack, two issues of which are out right now from Image Comics, which is a political satire. So we talk about the origins of that and a little bit about what got Sam going on the book and his political history. But we try to keep it pretty even-handed through most of the interview. I thought we did a pretty decent job of that. And it's going to be a lot of fun to talk to him. I think we're going to have a good time chatting about Citizen Jack and some of his Marvel work and other stuff. But before we talk to Sam, we've got some business to take care of, Chris. And the first order of business is to talk about our listener sponsor for this week, Hark, a year-round holiday music podcast.
That's right, Matt. There are two co-hosts on this show. Their names are RJ and Ian, and they have sort of taken a page out of our book. And they are ranking every holiday song ever in the same kind of format that we use for every story ever. And it's something that I'm very, very excited about. And they do everything. They do the show year-round. And they take requests, and they do stuff like classic holiday songs. They do the eccentric gems, like they've done Space Christmas by Shonen Knife. They do terrible songs, which is something I'm very excited about. We have a lot of experience with terrible Christmas music here on this show. But something that is a valuable piece of information for our listeners, they have yet to do a single Psychopathic Records Family Christmas song. So if you want to find out where those last, where those end up on the list, then you should head over to harkpodcast.tumblr.com, find them on iTunes. I am going to straight up binge listen a ton of these over the next couple days. I like to listen to podcasts when I get up in the morning, and I cannot imagine anything more fun for me and probably more infuriating than listening to someone rank Christmas music, because I know what should be number one, right? I know what should be number one.
Well, they have ranked exactly one song that we have discussed on this show. It was from our Worst Christmas Mixtapes episode, and it was the Lady Gaga Christmas Tree song. It did not fare well.
No, it's not a very good song.
It is a bad song.
The argument that they have given us to tell you guys about whether you should listen to the show is, which is better, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer by Gene Autry or Christmas by Froggy Fresh? And again, I know which one of those is better. Because let me ask you a question. Does Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer ever mention John Cena? Not once. Not once. So check out the Hark podcast with RJ and Ian. I'm really excited about it. I cannot think of a better use of the every story ever format, which is really the order of everything format, by the way, just heads up. And they take on Christmas, Hanukkah, New Year's, winter songs. So Marshmallow World is available. Check them out. I'm so excited about this podcast.
Thank you to Ian and RJ for sponsoring the show. And now we've reached the part of the show where we're going to thank some other people who have helped us out, our newest supporters on Patreon.
That's right, Matt. These are people who have gone over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kicked in a couple bucks every month to help us keep the Christmas lights on and pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills. And I got to say, I had to re-up for insurance this today. I had to go back to the marketplace on that one. Thanks, guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I had to pay for my car insurance this week, which would not have happened without Patreon. Our newest Patreon supporters are Israel Gazelowitz.
Oh, thank you, Israel.
William Jones.
Thank you, William.
And Dr. Devin King.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Devin.
That's right. We are supported by doctors. Thank you to them.
Literally doctor recommended.
That's right. Thank you to them, and thank you to all our Patreon supporters for all their support. We've been doing Patreon pretty much throughout 2015. I think it's been a huge success, and we cannot thank all of you enough for all your support and all your help. We really appreciate it. And we're trying to get out lots of cool stuff to all you folks through the rest of this year, bonus content and all that cool stuff. And we have some plans and ideas for stuff for 2016 as well. All right, Chris, we've thanked lots of people. Let's do comforts and joys.
Let's do it, Matt. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas indeed. So come on and diggity-tack yourself before you wreck yourself. All right, Chris, what is comforting you this week?
A couple things, Matt. First of all, we got our Christmas cards back. It's very exciting. I have a stack of them in the other room. Aiden is currently addressing them so that we can send them out soon. Cannot wait for you to see them. I cannot wait for you. I actually need your address.
I'm
email
super
me
psyched.
That when we're done with the show here.
All right, I'm super psyched for it. I've been doing, we don't have photo Christmas cards, but we were addressing some Christmas cards earlier tonight ourselves. So, we'll exchange addresses, even though I'm pretty sure I have yours somewhere and you probably have mine somewhere.
I know I have yours somewhere. I just do not have it handy. But something else happened, this week, and it's something very Christmassy. It's something very fun. I got a present from, our good friend David Brothers. He sent me a big box of manga that I think he was planning on getting rid of. A couple months ago, he was talking about he needed to, you know, clear off some bookshelf space, and he was getting rid of a bunch of I think it's a run of Monster, the Naoki Urasawa book. And I said, hey, if you know nobody you know wants those, I would be interested in taking those off your hands. And then I kind of forgot about telling him that, and then a couple days ago he's like, hey, what's your address? I'm going to send you. And a giant, very heavy box of manga showed up on my doorstep. And the best thing about it, Matt, was that I opened it up and there was a piece of paper sitting on top, and in David's very neat handwriting, it just said, you are already dead.
An ominous message.
A very ominous message. I mentioned that to him, and he's like, yeah, as soon as I sent that, I was like, I hope this doesn't get inspected at the post office. Like, I hope nobody opens this up. But no, the reason it said that was because he had a copy of the Fist of the North Star Master Collection, Volume 1, sitting right underneath it. That is, of course, Ken's catchphrase in Fist of the North Star, Ome wa Moshindaru. And so I picked that up and I started reading it. Now, Matt, you and I watched the Fist of the North Star movie for Movie Fighters.
The live action one, yeah.
Yeah, the live action one. The not Japanese live action one, too.
Right. The one that has Vader in it.
The one that has Vader in it. It was terrible. It did not do a lot to make me want to go read Fist of the North Star. But since it was around and since this is the Master Collection, every page in full color, I've been reading it. Matt, did you know that book is just Mad Max? Like, it's literally just Mad Max in that first part.
But with fighting that makes people explode.
Yeah, it's instead of cars, it's karate. But like, not like if you look at Ken, he's kind of like, he wears like the leather jacket with like the shoulder pad, right? And he's kind of like, he's kind of like what you would draw manga Mel Gibson, right? So you kind of know that going in. It's set in a post-apocalyptic world, but then he literally fights like Lord Humongous in the first story. Like, he literally stops a bunch of dudes
that character's in the animated movie too. Like, it is not subtle.
No, it's like 1,000,000% Mad Max. Which is great, because I've also been, the only thing I've been doing other than working is playing Fallout. So I've been in a very post-apocalyptic story mood, and like just sitting there reading it, I was like, is that Lord Humongous who's about to get punched so hard he explodes? It was. He did. It was great. So I am looking forward to making my way through that box of manga from David. I don't think David Brothers listens, but on the off chance that he does, thanks again. That was a great, great little Christmas present. That was awesome. Matt, what is giving you comfort this week?
Well, if anybody wants to send me a box of manga, I would take it. I didn't get a box of manga. What I did get...
Do you want me to send you a box of manga?
What I did get, actually, today, the day we were recording this, is two more boxes of Copernicus Jones trade paperbacks, which means that I can finally, maybe, come close to fulfilling the rest of the Kickstarter backers' orders that I have outstanding. Because here's what happened. Kevin Warren, the artist of Copernicus Jones, and I had a convention back in October here in Asheville, a one-day convention, and my point of contact at the printer said, is there a date by which you need books? And I said, well, I'm doing a convention at this time. It would be great to have some books by then. And he said, sure, I'll send you some of the order to get you through the convention, and you can start fulfilling Kickstarter stuff too. And I was like, great. And then I was kind of waiting for the rest of them, and it took them a little while, but they finally came. So I've got two big heaping boxes of Copernicus Jones books to send out to people. I've been trying desperately to get all those books out. I feel like I'm behind, but I also know that, you know, Kickstarters just always take more time than you think. So if you are a Kickstarter backer for Copernicus Jones and you've not gotten your book yet, hopefully it will be to you soon. I know holiday shipping can be a bit of a terror. There's also been some weird stuff happening with some stuff that I've shipped. Like, I've had some just damaged books arrive in places. I got a note from Ross May, who I am fairly sure is a listener. He is also an artist. He does some Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle stuff for IDW and some other cool comics. And he emailed me to tell me that my package arrived and did not have a Copernicus Jones book in it. Instead, it had a novel in French by a French writer. And he said, yeah, I just wanted you to know that I really kind of wanted a Copernicus Jones book, not this other book. And I said, I did not send you that book. Somehow in customs, because Ross lives in Canada, somehow in customs, when the package was being inspected or something, they switched the books. So as far as I know, some Quebecois French speaker has a copy of Copernicus Jones when they intended to get a novel in French. And Ross instead got that book. I am intending to replace Ross's book. Ross did something very nice, and I'm going to give him a shout-out on the show for this. When he emailed me and I said, yeah, I'll send you a replacement, don't worry about it. He actually, as an act of good faith, sent me a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles trade in exchange, because he knew I would have to ship another book internationally. So, Ross, thank you for that. I'm sorry that such a weird thing happened on that inspection through customs. And for everybody else who is supposed to be getting a Copernicus Jones book, I hope to have one to you soon. All right, Chris, those are our comforts. Let's talk about some joys. What is bringing you joy this week?
Well, Matt, this is it's 100% payola time here on War Rock and Ajax. You know the thing we do where it's 100% payola time?
Yeah, that's a thing we've been doing for the 283 episodes before this.
Every episode, every week, Every week we have that segment, 100% Pillow Time. No, but this is something I was emailed about by someone doing PR, and they were like, "Hey, would you like a review copy of this project or product?" And I was like, "Yes, yes, I would." And now I'm talking about it because it did arrive and it turned out to be pretty awesome. There is a company called Abrams Notary, Noterie, and they are making a bunch of like stationery for geek themed interests. You know, there's some Star Wars stuff, there's some Adventure Time stuff, but the one that I was really into was that they had a Super Mario Brothers set of notebooks, note cards, and a journal, and they arrived. And Matt, you know how I like to notebook. You know how I like to write in little notebooks on paper.
What if these you were in a game where the Marios chased you?
Exactly. They sent me the notebook pack and the pack of note cards. And the note cards are pretty cool because they're, you know, there's a little Mario, a little Luigi, a little Toad, and a little Peach. And it's the original Mario Brothers, the NES 8-bit sprites. And you can, like, write a little note on them, and then you can fold them so that they kind of stand up. That's pretty cool. But the little notebook set, it's a set of three notebooks that has – it's designed with Mario graphics. There's one that has a big Mario on the cover. There's one that has a bunch of little Marios. And there's one that's a you know, a pocket moleskin or field notes sized book that has just a single Mario on the cover. It's a little red notebook with a black Mario on the cover. And they look really cool, but on the actual pages – they have put in like sprites from the games. So there will be like little scenes playing out. Like there's, I just flipped open the notebook to a page, and this is the otherwise blank sketchbook. And it's just got the like mushrooms from the kind of, you know, world 1-3 stage. And Mario is kind of, you know, jumping off one. There's a Koopa on one. It's hard to describe, but they're really, really cool designs, and I really like them. And I would not be wrecking them or enjoying them if I didn't think they were actually really cool. But they were pitched to me as a last-minute gift idea. So if you have someone who is like me and like loves notebooks and especially like cool themed notebook stuff, get these. Because I don't think they are fun fact, a couple years ago for Christmas, our friend Dr. K got me a Peanuts-themed moleskin, like a full-size moleskin journal that was had some really cool Peanuts design stuff on it. And I've never used it because it's one of those things where it's so nice I'm afraid of messing it up. Like, there's a lot of pressure on a Peanuts moleskin. But the Mario one seems like it is a lot more fun to kind of actually sit down and use. And it's not too terribly expensive. So check out Abrams Notary, because I really, really love these notebooks. I wish I had a stack of them. I wish I had said I'd need like 10 of these to review, because I would give them as gifts and keep a bunch for myself.
Can I just note how much the phrase Peanuts moleskin sounds like something that gets cut off of a person at a religious ceremony?
It does evoke that, yes.
Yeah.
It does.
That's all I had to add to that.
All right, cool. That's a good ad. Good ad.
Thanks.
Matt, what is your joy this week? What gives you joy?
I promised that I would talk about this, and I'm going to. I wanted to talk a little bit about Metal Gear Solid 5, which I actually finished a few weeks ago, but we were so into wanting to talk about Jessica Jones last week that we talked about that. But I finished Metal Gear Solid 5 a while back, and kind of everything I said about it when I had it as a check a few weeks ago still stands. Like, it's all confirmed. The gameplay is great. I went through and played a good many of the side ops because they're just fun to do up to a point. Like, once they get to a certain level of repetitiveness, maybe they're not as fun anymore. It's kind of got that open world syndrome in that way, but... And on top of that, it does feel like the game isn't finished. There are two chapters to the game. Chapter 1 is a very fully fleshed out story that with a beginning, middle, and end. And then you head into chapter two, and it feels like it's going to be that. And then it turns into this very strange thing where you start replaying levels from earlier in the game, but they're harder. Or they have like weird stipulations attached to them, like you can't be noticed or whatever. Now, you don't have to play those levels to finish the game. There are other ways to finish the game, like you can do the side ops missions or something like that. But those missions start coming up. There are only maybe like 7 or 8 story missions in Chapter 2, and then you're just at the end. And the end is the very first mission in the game. The very first episode is what the game calls them. It's the first episode, but in an entirely different context. So you learn this big twist of the game and about who you are in the final mission. But it's really just a replay. So it's a strange game story-wise. There are things about it I really liked and story elements that I thought were really cool, like kind of that Metal Gear big idea kind of stuff. But at the same time, you just have to wonder like what the game could have been if there wasn't some weird situation where Konami wasn't allowing Hideo Kojima to go to award shows. Because that's a thing that happened. Like, Metal Gear Solid won, like, a Game of the Year award or something at whatever video game award show, and they just had to make an announcement that Konami had not allowed Hideo Kojima to go to the award show. Because I guess they're worried about what he's going to say? I don't know. It makes me hope, like, really hope, that there will be some kind of expansion to the game released, but I'm kind of not thinking that that's not going to happen. So we're just going to have to like settle for this kind of like really fun to play, very interesting, and completely unfinished game. Because how many stories have 2 chapters, right? Like, you would think that there would be more than 2 chapters to a game like this.
Right.
Then again, you can almost read into it something about the ending, like some kind of weird commentary directed at you, the player, that relates to the big twist at the end. That almost seems like accidental, but given the like weird storytelling technique that the game takes, you could almost read like a thematic message in the way that it just kind of abruptly ends. And sort of the reins of the story are handed over to you. I will leave it at that. I really did enjoy playing the game, though. And if you are a person with any interest at all in Metal Gear, and you've kind of been put off by some of the stuff about how the game is unfinished, don't let that stop you from playing, because what you do get is really good. Chris, those are our comforts and joys. Let's jump into talking about some of the comics that came out this week.
Let's do it.
All right, Chris, let's start by talking about Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 1, which came out this week.
I am really excited about.
Yeah, I really liked the book in a lot of ways. It acknowledges that it is a weird intercompany comic book crossover immediately.
Like, okay.
It establishes that this is Gotham City. The Ninja Turtles and the Foot Clan are not supposed to be here. In fact, there's one kind of explanatory sequence where the Turtles are just talking about how weird it is that they're there, how they are kind of aliens in this world because they come from a different universe. And they're not really sure how they got there. The Foot Clan is going around stealing stuff from different laboratories because they've got some big plan in mind. And Batman kind of rightly believes that the Foot Clan and the Turtles are in cahoots. So his impending encounter with the Turtles is gonna follow that formula of like the heroes are at odds with each other until they figure out that they should team up against the bigger enemy. That said, this is by James Tynion in the IV, who we've talked about being, you know, an increasingly great Batman writer. And Freddie E. Williams is doing the art. It looks really good, and it is a really enjoyable, breezy read. You know, Tynion has written lots of Batman stories. He's got a pretty good handle on Batman. And the Turtles are, like, really enjoyably written as well. They're very, like, kind of beautifully in character. There's a great sequence where Killer Croc is going through the sewers and manages to find his way into the Turtles' makeshift hideout. And the way that Killer Croc reacts to seeing the Turtles' hideout while the Turtles are hiding in the rafters above. It's a really great scene where everybody is kind of surprised by the habits of the other character. So despite it following that, you know, crossover formula, it is really fun and definitely worth a read.
Yeah, it's the thing that really blew my mind about it, and I've been excited about it because you know that I have been loving IDW's TMNT stuff. We've talked on this show about how Tynion is becoming such a great Batman writer with stuff on Batman and Robin Eternal. What blew my mind is that this has never happened before.
Yeah,
how did
I mean,
this not happen 20 years ago?
Because Batman was too busy crossing over with Spawn and the Punisher, I guess. I don't know why it hasn't happened before now, but that it is happening now is really good. Because I feel like this is a better story than we would have gotten in the mid-90s, right? Or the early to mid-90s. I really liked it. The one thing that kind of threw me on the issue, and, you know, it's an artistic choice, is that the coloring is a little distracting. There's a very sort of intentional, almost like watercolor look to it. But I will say this, I noticed it and then I stopped noticing it. Like, it's a little jarring at first, and then you get a few pages into the book and it all sort of fits. It clicks into place. So even though I found the coloring slightly distracting, it got to the point where the art really fit and worked. Let's move on to yet another Batman comic that came out this week. Batman number 47, which I really enjoyed. I've actually been digging the Gordon as Batman stuff throughout, but it really felt like this issue served as a sort of a climax to the you know, the meta story that's been going on since Gordon has taken the cowl.
It feels like a big turning point
for several reasons, right?
For several reasons, like, yeah. it's a turn. Like, I interviewed Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo about it, and Scott talked about how, you know, one of my questions was about how whether he wanted to do what he does in this issue at the risk of overshadowing some of the other stuff. And he's like, no, there's been, like, since Super Heavy started, there have been three real characters that are getting stories in here. And it's Jim Gordon, the new Batman. It's Bruce Wayne, the old Batman. And it's Duke Thomas, who is one of the Robins in We Are Robin. And they all three get these big moments that change everything in this issue.
Yeah, they really do.
And one of them is a big moment for us, the reader, like a bigger moment than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, it's the snap out of it Bruce moment. It's Bruce Wayne seeing an oncoming subway train as a giant bat.
Well, not that. I mean, that is big, but there's the one at the end. that is the big change for me, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's true too. I mean, there's a villain turning point too. Mr. Bloom is not what you thought. And that reveal is so well done. Like, they pull it off so nicely. But then there's also the turning point for Gordon, because the image that we've had of Gordon as Batman is sort of fundamentally changed here because of what happens to the rookie, right?
One of the things that really gets me, the thing that's hilarious about this issue is that when I wrote about it, and I know that I think CBR did this too, we use the big header image of the bat coming down the subway. Because that's a very evocative image and it's a very big image, but it doesn't quite spoil that last page reveal for people who hadn't read it yet.
Yeah.
And poor Kieran Sheehack got so excited because he thought Barbatos had come back into the story. he was like, oh, does Barbatos come back? I got to rush home and read this comic. And I had to text him and be like, Kieran, it's not Barbatos. I'm sorry. I could not let him get so excited thinking the Bat Demon, Darkseid's hyper adapter, had been sent back, because that showing up would have been look, it would have made the story great, greater than it already is, which is pretty solid. It's really good stuff, but I could not let him think he was going to see Barbatos and then have that crushing disappointment that only a very small number of readers could know.
This Snyder run on Batman is really something. It keeps hitting these points where it's like, okay, Snyder's running out of steam now. But then he doesn't. I don't know if it's topping himself. I don't know if he's going to top Zero Year. But he keeps figuring out these ways to do these big stories. And it's kind of amazing.
Yeah, and at this point, Snyder and Capullo have been on Batman, next month is 4 years, right? But actually, it's longer than that, because there have been, zero issues in there, so I guess September was 4 years.
Yeah, September would have been 4 years.
September would have been 4 years, and not only that, but they've been on the same book, which I can't think of another team. Obviously Morrison was on for a really long time, but he was on Batman, and then he was on Batman and Robin, and then he was on Batman Incorporated.
And there was a lot of
a single story.
There was a lot of artist musical chairs in that too.
Yeah.
Capullo's taken an issue or two off here and there, but for the large part, he's been very consistent.
Yeah. I think he went 2 years without taking a month off.
Yeah.
Without a fill-in artist. And, there's no way that they're not going to go down as one of the, one of the greatest creative teams on Batman in history. Because who else has done it that long and at this level? Just looking at it from sheer volume and from sheer, every time you think, okay, it can't get bigger than this one. It somehow goes bigger in a different way.
It's not even going bigger. It's just figuring out new ways to tell big stories, which I think is even better. It's not just topping. It's let's go in this direction this time. Let's go big, but let's go in this direction.
What does Batman mean to Duke Thomas? What does Batman mean to Jim Gordon? What does Batman mean to the Joker? What does Batman mean to, when he first shows up? What does Batman mean to the Court of Owls? It's a lot of stories about what Batman means. And I think that's really cool because, obviously I think that's cool, right? Because I think about what Batman means every second of my life.
Yes.
But, yeah, I love the way that it just keeps going. And it keeps being fun and rewarding. In a really cool way, in a way that you might not expect. I think that's really cool.
Speaking of big stories, I wanted to wrap up by quickly talking about Secret Wars number 8, which is the penultimate issue of the series. And I won't say too much about it. We talked about issue 7, where it is revealed that Ben Grimm was the wall, the barrier, the whole time. And this issue has a fist fight between Ben Grimm and Galactus, who is being controlled by Franklin Richards, or I guess Franklin Von Doom in Battleworld. There's an amazing scene with Groot. There is a big reveal involving Sue and Reed Richards. There's a fist fight between Thanos and Doctor Doom. The moments in Secret Wars are so like presented as such big dramatic moments. This feels like the event comic we've been waiting for a long time.
It's certainly the one I've been waiting for.
Yes. In a different way. But like, as far as just like story payoffs and huge moments and stuff where you're like, wow. Like, it's not even about it being universe changing. It's just about wowing us, right? And Secret Wars has done that again and again and again. Made these connections between characters and put them in a different context, but sort of evaluated those connections in interesting ways. It's just good. So if you haven't been reading Secret Wars, which probably you have, but issue 8 is really good. We have talked about comics. We have done comforts and joys. It is now time for us to talk to our guest, Mr. Sam Humphries.
Let's do it. Joining us for the program this week is someone we're very excited to have back on the show. He's always a good time to talk to. And you will know him as the writer of books like Citizen Jack, out from Image Comics, as well as Marvel's Weird World number 1 coming this week.
Coming on Wednesday. What is that going to be? The 16th.
Sam Humphries is here, everybody. The man who used to have one of the most beautiful heads of hair in comics and then chopped it all off.
Yeah, those days are over. Now I just have a completely unremarkable head of hair and it feels amazing.
Yeah, I gotta hear the story on that, because you were touting your hair as almost a brand for a while, that was your Twitter icon, silhouette.
I mean,
of a man with a giant head of hair.
Exactly. I mean, it still is. It's still my Twitter icon. I haven't decided whether I'm going to change my international branding trademarks or not, but. I mean, I've just got a head of hair that can really only do a couple of things, and one of them is to grow a really large afro, especially for a white dude. So after some years of strife and toil in high school, trying to adapt a hip, cool, Mr. Popular hairstyle, in college, I just chopped it all off, and I was like, fuck it, like, I'm just going to leave you alone and you try not to get in my way. Like, me and my hair made this deal, and then I ended up with an afro for like the next 20 years. and it really did. I mean, you're being like a little snarky, Matt. You're being a little snarky, but it's true, because that is how like most people recognized me, or how people would find me in a restaurant, or how they would describe me to other people. You know what I mean? Like, it was like my defining characteristic. And so, I mean, it's been in the back of my head for years that I wanted to shave my head and do it without warning, like completely without warning. So one day recently here in Los Angeles, it was hot as fuck, but that wasn't entirely it. And my hair was like huge and it needed to be cut, but I was just like, it just seemed like such a pain in the ass. And I was sitting there on the couch, my girlfriend was at work, and I was like, this is it, like, today's the day. And I went in the bathroom and shaved it all off by myself. It was great.
That's one version of the story.
Well, Sam, congratulations on identifying my brand, which is a little snarky. Am I right?
A little snarky, but there's some truth to it. I think that's your brand.
That's a pretty accurate description of Matt's brand.
I mean, I really just was just ready to shake it up a little bit after 20 years, you know? And it's been fun. Like, the day I shaved it off, it was one of my closest friend's birthdays, and I went to her party, and she tried to introduce herself to me.
Sam, what I think is that you did that Prince Halloween costume.
Yes.
And then it was like, there are no more worlds to conquer.
That's an entirely inaccurate way. I mean, that's a little snarky, but there's some truth to it.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to hit it on Matt's brand.
Sorry to horn on Matt's brand over here, but you know, it was a magnificent achievement. You're correct. And after that, I was kind of lacking in stunts by that point. So maybe the only stunt was to zig instead of zag.
So, like, you talked about being like, because I'll tell you, like, we've talked to each other at cons.
Oh, sure.
Like, we've hung out IRL. You're gonna have to, like, you're gonna have to say, like, hey, Chris, it's Sam Humphries.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
you're gonna
have to. I've been doing it for, I mean, like, it's been like 3 or 4 months, and I just did it the other weekend. I ran, pardon me while I name drop over here, but I ran to Zeb Wells, and I hadn't seen him since then, and I was like, hey, Zeb, how's it going? And he gives me that, like, 1,000-yard stare of, like, oh my god, is this person dangerous? Is this a fan? Like, who is this person? It's me. It's Sam Humphries. He's like, oh my god, I can't believe it.
Yeah, like, that's your next little bit of life.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm not offended by it at all. In fact, I have been looking forward to it for years.
Have you noticed that, like, you're not getting the pitches approved at cons like you have been?
Yeah,
presumably not. Look, you're doing okay.
The invites to the parties have dried up, and my editors are just canceling conference calls now, and not really getting the notes that I'm used to. No, so far, whatever powers I may be in possession of, they have not diminished.
Well, I'm glad. I'm relieved.
Sam, do you want to know? Like, I created some Sam Humphries fan fiction in my head about why you cut your hair, and in my mind, because of Citizen Jack, you were refashioning yourself as a political power broker out there to say hard-hitting, intense political statements, and the short hair was a way to streamline yourself to give people that impression. That, you know, you're gonna move to DC. You're gonna start wearing power ties.
I'm gonna open an office on K Street. I'm gonna become a high-powered lobbyist. But Matt, you're absolutely right. Again, a little snarky, a little right. That you do need to dress for the job you want, not the job you have.
It's why I dress as Batman.
Touché, and that's your brand.
Always like, Mom, let's go to the movies. Come on. Yeah, I know it's weird to want to go see Catching Mockingjay Part 2 with your mom when you're a grown man. But come on, let's go do it.
Let's go on, make it happen.
Okay, so that my little story there was not so subtle way of transitioning into talking about Citizen Jack.
It was good. And I have, I think, the burning question on everybody's mind.
Okay.
Now, if people haven't read Citizen Jack, which they absolutely should, it is... I wrote a review of it last month.
Very, very generous review. Thank you very much.
Well, Sam, seriously, I loved the book. It is.
Thank you.
And I got to read the first two, which was nice. Yeah. You sent over one and two.
Yeah, and we're far ahead.
It's a great comic. If anybody out there isn't reading it, can you maybe take us through like what it is real quick?
Yeah, it's about a dumbass who makes a deal with the devil to run for president.
To run for?
To
run for.
Well, it's no spoilers. It's vague at this point, isn't it?
That is true.
The story, the first issue launches him into a campaign, and the result is not a foregone conclusion, as opposed to making a deal with the devil and he wakes up and he's already president. I am making a storytelling distinction.
Here is the question.
Yeah.
You are writing a political satire. This is a political satire comic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I mentioned was that we have somehow found ourselves in this time where there's a couple of really, really solid political satire comics. If like, yeah. I don't know how aware of Prez you are, but
I'm very aware right up to the point of not having read it.
I mean, I understand why.
Yeah, I hear it's amazing, and like 2 years from now, I'm going to read it all together, and I'm going to love it. I'm sure because everybody says all these great things about it, but for obvious reasons, I've not gotten into it.
Yeah, which is completely understandable. But you're writing a political satire.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
How are you doing that now? How is it even possible to write a political satire right now?
You mean in this day and age?
In this day and age.
Like in this age of politics being like its own satire, or in the state of the direct market that we have right now? Or
no, I meant like, the former. I'm curious about the latter from a business standpoint. But I mean, like, look, we've been trying not to get too political on this show, but you have to admit, political news is becoming impossible to satire. Like, real life politics are off the charts at this point.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people's reaction to Citizen Jack. I mean, look, I started working on Citizen Jack about 2 years ago, and actually doing some writing about a year ago, maybe roughly. So people's reaction to Citizen Jack is like, oh my God, like, you made a Donald Trump comic. You saw what was going on in the campaign and all this stuff that's happening, and Ben Carson and Hillary Clinton and blah blah blah, and you made a comic about it. And the truth is that none of this was happening. None of this was, absolutely none of it was a factor when we started making Citizen Jack. Really what I did was I just set out to satirize the system that we have and the way that it all works together. And it just turns out that the satire and the real life system have kind of birthed very similar situations and very similar dynamics. So I like to think that it legitimizes my abilities as a political prophet, as a political pundit, as Matt might put it. We did not see any of this coming, and I mean, you're right. Like, I think there is a point with things that matter where satire becomes impossible, or it becomes very impossible to achieve because the stakes become too high. If I were to start writing Citizen Jack now, I probably wouldn't do it because what was a fairly rollicking campaign has taken a really dark turn in the past week, with Donald Trump threatening to restrict the travel rights of Muslims. It's certainly, he's flirting with being unsatirizable, and certainly is no longer just a joke. And you know, we talk about this in the book in terms of like, who is electable and who is not, and who's a spoiler, and do spoilers really matter, and that kind of stuff. But, you know, Trump normalizing this kind of rhetoric and making extremists look closer to moderate is a dangerous thing for this country. It's a dangerous thing for everybody. So, I don't know, not to get too much into that specifically, but that becomes a very delicate thing to try and satirize. And you know, one of our goals of this book from the very beginning is like, it's to not be a preachy book. And I mean, that's what everybody says. Nobody wants to do a preachy book, but we don't. We go so far as to not even have Democrats and Republicans. As you guys know, we have the Freedom Party and the Patriot Party, and we don't tackle any specific issues. So we don't have, you know, healthcare, and we're not going to have Jack or any other candidate ape like you know, suggesting a travel ban on Muslims or any other kind of real world issue that we have. It's a delicate line, and it's especially the media has gotten to the point where they have become a lampoon of themselves. There was a point where, just in my notes and outlines of this book, that it was much more over the top, and I feel like it was much more biting too, but it was a lot. It would not have been as easy to relate to it because it was much more like surrealist. It was much more like the discreet charm of the bourgeoisie, like some of those aggressively surrealist European films of the '60s. And like instead of the news show, like the show was like much more like a Double Dare style show and that kind of stuff. I mean, the Cricket the Dolphin did survive that version of the book, but
I was going to say the only like the only way to tell your version of the news media apart from the real life news media is that yours has a talking dolphin, which is never commented on or mentioned.
Nope.
And it is the Cricket the Dolphin is the moderate voice.
Cricket the Dolphin is the breakout star of 2015, I gotta say. Everybody loves Cricket the Dolphin.
You're not wrong.
So one of the things I was really fascinated about, like talking about like how there are, you know, the parties are different parties in this book, and you're not talking about specific issues. But at the same time, it presents this very recognizable snapshot of the political environment of right now.
And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's because so much of what we talk about or what people find interesting or I don't know what is not about those things. It's about personalities. It's right. about optics. It's about, you know, all these other things, and we've got strategists and people on staffs who aren't policymakers. They're just PR people.
Yeah.
And you know, I just like, is that kind of the idea that you went into this with, where like it's, you kind of said, we don't have to get into the grimy details of policy because that's not what this stuff is about anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of like, we don't have to get in the grimy details of policy because in some ways policy isn't what's really broken with this system. What's broken with the system has very little to do with ideology or the left or the right. What's wrong with the system is all the things that you just mentioned. It's the prioritizing of entertainment. It's the prioritizing of... It's the repackaging of issues in a way that is like television worthy or buzzworthy, should I say? And it's the reliance on money to get candidates where they need to be in the media sphere. And you know what it comes down to is I've said this in a lot of interviews, but if I had to like sum up the problem in one pithy statement, I would say that it just comes out of the fact that everybody's got to eat. And if you're talking about gerrymandering or campaign finance reform, and you are a producer on a news show, like that is not going to get you the ratings. But if you have people arguing over like the latest shit that Trump said or the craziest viral video of some campaign or something like that, like, yeah, you're going to put that on because that's what really, like, grabs people's attention, or a very sensationalized version of a very important issue. You're going to go with the sensationalized version because you can get, like, a really crackerjack, like, 7-minute segment out of that. But if you're talking about super PACs and the impact of soft money and dark money on campaigns and the resulting impact on legislation and policy and the way that we run our government, like, people's eyes are just going to glaze over. Those are not hot topics. Like, nobody has really succeeded in making those really sizzling, compelling topics of discussion. I mean, even, like, things like, you know, The Big Short, the new – Adam McKay is adapting the Michael Lewis book called The Big Short about the meltdown of the financial sector in 2008. And I'm really interested to see this movie and see how he transformed these subjects, like collateralized debt obligations, because this stuff is dry and it's purposely obtuse. Because if you are getting away with shit, whether you are in politics or finance or both, if you're getting away with bullshit and you know you're not supposed to be getting away with this, a great way to do it is to make it so complicated and so obtuse that the news media doesn't even want to touch it. Like, they can't even begin to explain it to people. They can't even begin to explain it to regular, everyday Americans. And the more you can do that, the more you can call things collateralized debt obligations instead of a Ponzi scheme, the less people are going to be exposed to what you're really doing, and the less oversight you're going to have, and the longer you're going to be able to get away with it, and the richer you're going to be able to get. Now, if you want to talk about the parallels between that and the direct market, like, we can go into that too.
I find it interesting that, like, just to hear you talk about something like that, where clearly, like you have a lot of opinions and emotional attachments, or seemingly,
I wrote Citizen Jack because I'm pissed.
Yeah,
this is an angry book.
Yeah, and like, that's really interesting to me, because like, I keep peeling back the layers of the onion of myself on this show and Movie Fighters. On Movie Fighters, I revealed my history of knowing stuff about the Bible, and on this, I'm going to reveal my history as a political reporter. Like, as a political reporter in another life, to write about politics, like, I had to put myself at a remove from everything. I had to see that wider view. Or I wouldn't write anything, right? Like, or I wouldn't put letters down on the page, because I'd be too angry or upset or feel too much on one side to do something. Mm-hmm. Did you feel any kind of obligation to try to get that broader stance, or has doing this book, has it pulled you in even further into kind of the passionate feelings? Because I guess one benefit of doing a comic like this instead of, you know, quote unquote objective reporting, is that you don't have to wear that objectivity hat. You can just put your viewpoint in there.
Yeah. Well, I think in the process of writing Citizen Jack and kind of crafting the intent of the book and crafting the tone of the book with artist Tommy Patterson, is that we've had to put a priority on achieving that remove on paper. The same kind of remove that you talk about, but for different purposes. Because if I went on a comic book version of the same rant that I just went on here on the show, that'd be a shitty comic book. I mean, it's barely an acceptable podcast interview, but it definitely makes for a shitty comic book.
I mean, so, I wasn't going to say it, but yes.
So
it's good.
So you really have to temper yourself. But on the other hand, like, the more I kind of work it through and think about my own feelings on the system and in the process of making the comic and figuring out what I'm really angry about, you know. I mean, this book almost started more as like being pissed about the 2000 election specifically, in the Supreme Court and how that election was decided, and then the run up to the Iraq War, and that may still play into it, but it became a book that was much more about Citizens United and super PACs and all that kind of stuff. So in some ways, you know, if you interview me on a podcast, or you're unlucky enough to get stuck with me at a party, you will find that my anger is sharpened. It is more easily accessible because I've really kind of been forced to go through the process of figuring out exactly why I'm pissed off.
You talked about, you know, you both talked about that remove, and if I were you, Sam Humphries,
yes,
and I had written this book 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and then watched, you know, because obviously you're a guy who is politically aware, obviously you're a guy who's paying attention,
right?
And then I had watched the past 6 months, the past year of politics unfold. The first thing I would do is sit down and write a script for a comic where Jam Jumfries became a multi-billionaire.
and
then the second thing,
hidden tribe of unicorns, became ruler of Mars. And yes, no, I hear what you're saying.
And then the next thing I would do is have a complete nervous breakdown. Because our politics are not difficult to discern, but if you've been listening to this show for long enough, then you have probably seen this change in me, where, mm-hmm. like, in 2008, in the 2008 election, I was on top of things. I was like reading stuff all the time, and I was, you know, during the entire administration before that, I had been like that as well. Like, 2000 was my first election, right. So that is the kind of election if you are a liberal person in South Carolina, and that is your first election.
God. Holy like, shit!
It sparks an anger in you.
You come out of that galvanized. That's almost as galvanizing as watching your Uncle Ben die because you fucked up.
Yeah, exactly. But like in 2008, like I came, and I do not say this lightly, I came like perilously close to just having a mental breakdown over this feeling that we were in the satire. Like this weird kind of solipsistic idea where it's like, you know, what if it's true that when you write a Batman comic, you create an entire world, and so the people who live in that world have to deal with those things as though they're reality? Like, how did we get into a reality where this is the real one? And, like, in 2008, like, I mean, look, I'm a Barack Obama guy.
Yeah.
That election, like, if you go back far enough on Twitter, there's pictures of me crying that night.
Yeah.
It was such, like, to the last minute. And then like 4 years later in the 2012 election, I was like, I can't do this again. Like, I will watch the news. I will, I will like be as aware as I need to be, but like, I can't get as deep into it as I did. Like
it wasn't going to be your fantasy football again.
Yeah. Like for 2012, I was not on 538. At all.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't even watch The Daily Show at that point because it was like things were so fucked that like I couldn't deal with it. And so like the experience of Citizen Jack and you know, like I read a book like Prez and I'm like, oh, this is 100% happening. Like, this is a factual look at the future. And I read a book like Citizen Jack, and I'm like, oh, this explains it. Like, maybe demons are real. I'm not a religious guy, but like Citizen Jack is American politics are starting to make me feel like demons are real.
Right. Yeah. I mean, a couple things occur to me. First of all, that 2008 election was some shit, huh? That was crazy shit. That was wild. Like, my heart is beating a little faster just thinking about it. And I kind of felt a similar trajectory in that 2008, I was, like, super involved. I actually campaigned for Obama. I made over 1,000 phone calls in support of the campaign. So I was, like, I was canceling plans to get in more hours at the phone bank and shit. Like, because I was just, I knew we just couldn't have like 8 more years of this George W. Bush shit. We're gonna have like 4 wars instead of 2. I was just like, God, this is crazy. And really up until like, Bear Stearns collapsed, like I thought it could have gone either way in my head. And I had the New York Times app where you could upload. You could reload like to the hour, like all the different polls and shit. It was like the 538 essentially, but as an app. And I was working at MySpace at the time, and there were a lot of politically active people, and it was just like every day, like people like we were just like running to each other's desks and be like, "Oh my god, did you see this poll? Oh yeah, but the Gallup poll." And then we were like dividing up how the Gallup poll works versus the other polls, and who do they ask, what the methodology. And it was just like it was wild.
Everybody was an extra on the West Wing in 2008.
Yes, exactly.
Everybody was running around their own little control room.
Yeah, exactly.
I won't go too deep into my experience, but I worked at a newspaper at the time, so you can imagine.
Shit. Oh my god. Yeah, well, fuck my little volunteerism story. I'm sure you have some real war stories.
I just went to a lot of, like, weird gatherings in Eastern Tennessee. Where people sadly watched screens, giant screens.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
On both sides, there was sad watching of screens.
Yeah. Well, I can't. I mean, it's funny because I remember every election cycle, and now I remember every election cycle. You guys will appreciate this with Andy Corey, because he gets very fantasy football with this from a very early stage. Like, he's already in deep on this election. I remember even in the 2004 election, we watched every debate together, and I had a little party at my house on election night, and we got two kinds of Boone's, you know, Boone's Farm. We got the red kind and we got the blue kind, and everyone had to take a swig of the blue kind when they announced the blue state, and everyone had to take a swig of the red kind when they announced the red state. And of course, Kerry lost that election. It was just a crushing night. And then I was at Andy's.
Just real quick, yeah. Sam. Mm-hmm. Jordan White, who is an editor at Marvel and also my podcasting partner on Sailor Business. Yeah. He's having a birthday party this year where it's an Atlas Shrugged birthday party where they're just going to watch all three Atlas Shrugged movies in order.
Oh, he told me about this. Yeah.
And drinking, like doing a shot of Boone's Farm blue and red for each state still sounds like a worse politically themed party than that. Especially if you know, it's the 2004 election.
2004. I remember, I definitely remember watching those debates with Andy and our friend Megan, and thinking like, I remember, I think it was the middle one where I was like, you know, Bush like did pretty good on that one. But I remember just going like, oh, Kerry's just fucking killing it. He's crushing him in the debates. You know what I mean? And then after the election being like, I am so naive. And I think that's how I got so involved in 2008. So I was like, I'm not going to let this happen again. I am not going to see this go down again. And of course it didn't go down that way. Not necessarily because of my involvement, but, anyway, I forgot how we got
there. As Matt said, you are the political power broker. You're the kingmaker now, Sam Humphries.
God, I wish. I'd rule this fucking country with an iron fist. It'd be so great.
Well, we could go down political memory lane for hours, I'm sure. But, Chris, I think it's actually getting close to time to turning it over to our listeners on Twitter who have many questions for Sam.
Good God.
That's right, Matt. And if our listeners want to get in on asking questions, if they want to put their questions to our guests, which is the only real democracy left in this country, how exactly can they go about that?
Well, you got to go off the grid. You got to move to a bunker in Mexico.
My God.
Get rid of all televisions, radio signals around you. Stop the media indoctrination that is seeping into your brain at all times. Get the radio waves out of your head. Get the cell phone waves out of your head.
How they get you, man. That's how they get you.
Satellites are infecting your body, getting into your organs and your internal features. It's devastating, and it's getting to us all.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
somebody's got to do something about it, man.
Once you have totally disconnected, start an account on Twitter.com and follow the Matt D. Wilson, that's me, and the ISB, that's Chris. Wait until Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 6:30 Pacific, and one of us will put up the call for questions for our guest, just like the questions you're about to hear for Sam Humphries. The first one I'm going to ask you, Sam, is from St. Hubbins on Twitter. And we kind of touched on this, but this is more about promotion for Citizen Jack rather than the story of Citizen Jack. St. Hubbins asks, do you think that Trump has provided any unintentional advertising for Citizen Jack? Do you think people are more aware of the book because of the circus of the pre-primary election that's going on right now?
I wish Trump would somehow read a copy of Citizen Jack and just assume, because he's Trump, that it's about him, and just like trash talk it on Twitter.
Humphries, he's a loser. Go
yeah, exactly.
Home.
Pathetic, double exclamation
point. Pathetic,
points.
Terrible hair.
Yeah, exactly. This clown, Sam Humphries, and he's got to at me, you know, like, oh, God, it'd just be a dream. Even if he didn't at me, I would just love to be trash talked by Trump. I just think that would be amazing. You know what? I don't know. I think it makes it a little easier for people to plug into the concept or to accept that this book is like a happening thing that they should pay attention to, because Chris, you were talking about a little bit earlier about like political books and like presses happening. And I did this interview on The Nation, and she was talking about like Bitch Planet's political overtones and Ta-Nehisi Coates on Black Panther. And she's like, do you think comics are trying to get more political? And I just kind of paused and I was like, no, I don't. I don't think comics want to get more political at all. I just think what's happening here is that you just have some creators who are passionate enough and or angry enough to make these books happen. I don't think they're necessarily a trend that is successful. I don't think it's a trend that anybody is really embracing. But I am glad it is happening. And I think because of Trump, it has made Citizen Jack a little bit more palatable to the industry, the direct market system as a whole. Because, you know, retailers, and I don't blame them, I don't think they're particularly interested in peddling political books. I just think that that's a hot potato that they would rather not touch. They got enough to worry about, and I totally get it. That was a long answer to a short question. I'll end it there.
Also, Howard the Duck ran for president like 35 years ago, right? Like it's not that new.
It's definitely not new. And Lauren, the journalist for The Nation, I mean, she totally knows that. I think, and I mean, you know, she was referencing like Captain America punching Hitler, and how, you know, nowadays we think that it was just a good guy punching the 20th century's worst bad guy. But if you read Cavalier and Clay, or you know the history a little bit, you understand that it was a political statement, because there was a debate at the time in this country about whether we should get involved in the war in Europe and the isolationism and Lindbergh, and whether, you know, how much we knew about the Holocaust and whether we should stick our nose into that bit, you know what I mean? And so it was an active political debate that they were addressing in having a Captain America deliver a haymaker into Hitler's face, and God bless him for doing it.
Kyle_probably on Twitter asks, who's That's your favorite on-screen devil?
God, you know, two jump to mind.
Elizabeth Hurley in that movie with Brendan Fraser that I don't remember the title of.
I also, that was the first one I thought of, and I also cannot remember the name of that movie.
Really? the first one that came to mind was Al Pacino in Devil's Advocate. I just love that film. I think that's a great pulpy devil film. And then the other one would be George Burns in Oh God, You Devil, where he played both God and the devil.
Those are good ones. Those are good choices.
Yeah. I think those Oh God, the Oh God franchise, so to speak, I think that's very undervalued.
The next question is from Leesk on Twitter.
Oh, James.
James. James addressed you very formally. Dear Sam, what is your favorite Prince song and album?
I would have to say, God, I put more stake in answering this correctly than I do in any of the political stuff. But I guess I would have to say, I mean, album, I'd have to say, like, Sign of the Times. Like, that's a very safe answer, I understand. You know what, I'll go with, like, I'll shoo the basic answer, and I'll go with, God, what was the one that came right after Purple Rain?
That would be Around the World in a Day.
Yes, thank you. No, not that one. Not that one.
Parade?
Yes, Parade. It is Parade.
Okay.
Sorry, two albums. Thank you for schooling me on this knowledge. Two albums after Purple. I'll go with Parade as my non-basic favorite album, and then I'll go with Seven as my favorite song right now.
I'll tell you what, though. Don't sleep on Dirty Mind.
Dirty Mind's a good album.
That's been heavy in my rotation lately, and I feel like people sleep on that album.
The Black album is real solid, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. The next question is from King of Doma on Twitter, and this is something we haven't actually broached yet, your Guardians of the Galaxy work, your Star-Lord work.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. What Guardian of the Galaxy do you most want in the Marvel movies but never expect to see?
Oh, shit. That's a loaded question. I have to put a massive disclaimer that they don't let me see shit about the movies, so this doesn't even allude to or hint or dodge any knowledge I might have about what's happening in the movies, because I have no idea. But I've always had a soft spot in my heart for Quasar, and I can't see the movie crew really giving a shit about Quasar. I might have a soft spot in my heart because there was a Quasar number one back in the day when I was really into just buying anything Marvel put out. It was done by Mark Gruenwald and Paul Ryan. I remember enjoying it a lot when I was a kid. I'm not quite sure how it holds up, but I did actually have a letter in one of the Quasar letter columns. So I'll always love Quasar because of that.
The next question is from Coltreg on Twitter. He wants to know, what is the smallest position of power that you would be willing to sell your soul for?
The smallest position of power?
Yeah, the lowest ladder on the rung.
The lowest on the rung? Oh my god.
Or the lowest rung on the ladder. I got that backwards.
Yeah. No, okay. Probably not pretty. I mean, here's the thing, we kind of like get into this in the book a little bit, but it's like, if you sell your soul for power, then you don't really have power because somebody has power over you. So it would have to be pretty high up. It'd have to be like some sort of like emperor for life kind of situation, like some role that doesn't really exist in the world. But I don't think I would sell my soul to be president. I don't think so. I think people do. In a very metaphorical way, I think they sell their souls, because to sell your soul is to put yourself in thrall of somebody else, and I think it's like if you do that to gain power, but then you're in thrall of somebody else, like what have you really done? Like virtually nothing. I think politicians. I think politicians with good intentions do that all the time, and that's how they get into trouble.
And if there's anything we've learned from movies like Bedazzled, which is that Elizabeth Hurley, Brendan Fraser, devil
movie. Somebody's been doing a little Googling over
there. That's right. It's that you can request, like, I want to be super rich and have a huge house. And then the devil, you know, does that monkey paw thing where you're a drug lord that all the authorities are after. So, you know. It always comes at a price.
Exactly.
I think that is probably going to be it. I think we're about out of time.
All right.
Our guest has been Sam Humphreys. Sam, thanks so much for coming on the show. Before we let you go, please tell all our listeners where they can find you on the internet.
You can find me on Tumblr, tumblr.com/Sam Humphreys. Or wait, that's not how Tumblr works. No, it's anyway. My username on Tumblr is Sam Humphreys. My username on Twitter is Sam Humphreys. My username on Instagram is Sam Humphreys. Don't bother finding me on Facebook. I won't add you. I'm private over there. The best place to really keep up with me is on one of those other three places. That's a good place to find me. But dudes, thank you for having me again. It's always a pleasure coming on the show. I had a great time.
Sam, it is always, always fantastic to talk to you and everybody out there.
Is this my third time on the show? Am I like set record before?
Yeah, I think so. I think this is number three for you. You're a three-timer, friend.
Three-timer? Three-timer club? Who else is in the three-timer club? Anybody else?
Let's see. Most people are either significantly more than three or less than three.
Oh,
I think Tom Fowler last week was a three-timer, right?
Yeah.
I think that was like his fourth or fifth.
Well, are we counting convention? Look, let's do this later. Sam Humphries, you've been a fantastic guest. Everybody, you know, we didn't talk about Weird World. Obviously, everybody should pick that up. All your Marvel stuff is fantastic, and people should be checking that out. But Citizen Jack, indie book, and it is phenomenal, beautiful art, great premise, great comedy. Talking dolphin in a suit. Go do yourselves a favor. Pick up Citizen Jack. It is fantastic. Sam, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks once again to Sam Humphries. Definitely go check out his stuff. And we're not wasting any time, folks, because this is it. This is the last, unless something drastic happens, this is the last segment of the year. We started 12 months ago where we are creating our master list of the 100 greatest comic book quotes of all time. Of all time. It's the Word Heavyweight Champions.
That's right. For all intents and purposes, this is like one of our last regular shows of the year. We're going to do a Christmas special. So this is basically it for Word Heavyweight Champions, unless you, the listeners, insist that we figure out a way to do more of these. This is it. Okay. Our first list comes from Rob Wesley. And he has three quotes for us. The first of which is, "Calling Batman, big trouble in Internet 3.0. That is from Batman Inc. number 7.
Okay. That line might be the best line in Batman Incorporated.
And what we agreed was like one of the – well, actually, it's 8 that is one of the worst issues of Batman Incorporated.
Yeah, like the issue that line sets up is the worst issue of the run. It's the worst Grant Morrison Batman comic.
Yeah. Oh, the all-text Joker story might be next.
I've gone back and reread the all-text Joker story, and the art in it is not great, because it's really poser-ish. Not like, you know, that guy's not a real artist, but like the software poser.
Right.
Like, it's really like PlayStation 1-ish, but the actual story, like, holds up better than you think when you go back and revisit it in the context of the run.
Yeah.
But boy, that Internet 3.0 issue is bad.
But that line in the teaser actually got me psyched to read it.
Yes.
Because that line is really good.
Because it's Batman suiting up in his internet suit.
Yes. Where do you think we put it?
I think it's better than Crom Help Me, I've Slain a Man Tonight, Not a Beast.
I think it's maybe probably better than Come With Me If You Want to Be Awesome.
I don't think it's as good as You Mean Lesbians.
Yeah, that's a good spot for that one. Okay, that's where that one goes. The next quote.
And with that, something's been knocked off the list.
That's right.
The Midnighter's self-description has been knocked off the list.
Wait, so we're leaving Mogo Doesn't Socialize at number 100?
Yeah, I think we installed that at number 100.
I'd be fine if that fell off, to be honest.
Okay. Then we'll adjust the end of the list as we get there.
Okay. The next quote is from Meatloaf, Humongous Rockstar of the Universe, Volume 1, Number 1. "We'll help, Meatloaf, but how?" That is spoken by Spider-Man, Captain America, Iron Man, The Thing, Cyclops, and Thor.
I gotta say, Wes is going for some good ones.
Yes, he is.
That's one of the all-time great, terrible PSA ads, right? Does it make the list?
I don't think so.
I don't think it does either, but like it gave me such joy to hear it.
Yeah, it's like, but it's only enjoyable because they name-drop Meatloaf, right? Like, just mentioning Meatloaf, I don't think makes it make the list.
Oh, man. I like that one better than Mogo Doesn't Socialize, but I guess Mogo Doesn't Socialize just got knocked off the list. That's 101.
Yeah.
That's 101 is what that is.
The third quote on Rob's list is, "Just as I expected, B-Corps was defenseless against the old-style 19th century wrestling holds that I am such an expert at. That is President Abraham Lincoln in the year 2971 from The Flash, Volume 1, Number 210, A House Divided.
Matt, have you ever read that issue?
I have not, in fact, read that issue.
That issue is amazing.
Who wrote that one?
I believe that is a Cary Bates original. The Flash goes to the year 2971, 1,000 years in the future, and finds out that there is a second American Civil War going on. And in order to prevent it, they cloned Abraham Lincoln and made him president. And then there is a John Wilkes Booth clone on a jetpack trying to kill him, who is subdued with 19th century wrestling holds.
You're right. It's Cary Bates.
That comic's great, and that quote is great.
I feel like this version of it is too long, though.
I don't know. You can't really trim that one down.
I mean, you can take out Just As I Expected, but...
No, because I feel like that does make the quote.
It kind of
like,
does.
Abraham Lincoln was like, this guy doesn't know about 19th century wrestling holds. This guy doesn't know about joint manipulation. I think that goes just below the police wouldn't think to look for your body on Saturn.
Okay. That's good. That puts it above our new number 100. Wrestling is the sport, the only true sport. No wimpy timeouts, no padding or protection. Just FYI. Stingy got beat. Stingy got beat by Lincoln.
Yeah, Sting is no Abraham Lincoln. I mean, I think we can all agree on that.
That is true. He tried his best to save, to keep the union of WCW together, but it didn't work. Okay. The next list comes from Timothy Featherston. These are all quotes from the last issue of Preacher. Since we already have quite a few Preacher quotes on the list, and these are all from the same issue, I think that we should just read all three, decide if any of them go on the list, and just pick one if they do.
All right, that is acceptable.
Okay. The first one is spoken by Jesse. Now take my hand and swear I love you. I'll love you till the goddamn stars go out.
Oh, that's a good one.
The second one is God. I was alone. I wanted to be loved. And the third one is Cassidy. I think you were right, Jesse. I think I'll try acting like a man. I think the only one that goes on the list is I swear I'll love you until the goddamn stars go out. That is a great line.
Yeah, that's it. Although I think I'll start acting like a man. That's also pretty good. But yeah, it's that Jesse Tulip scene at the end of Preacher. Oh my god! Like that makes. You know, I always tell people skip Volume 7. Like skip Salvation.
Yeah.
But like, don't stop reading it. Like just skip
that
Volumes 8 and 9.
Yeah.
Jesse meets his mom and loses his eye. He's fine. Like just, you know. Just skip to Volume 9. But God almighty, that last bit with Jesse and Tulip, like can't you guess? But yeah, I'll love you till the goddamn stars go out. Does that beat I'll love you, Lois Lane, until the end of time?
I think it does. I find that to be a more evocative proclamation of love than until the end of time. I don't think it beats Miss, though.
I don't think it does either. It definitely doesn't beat Miss. So we're looking – we got a range here.
Yeah.
It doesn't beat the Big Bart Mr. Miracle quote.
Yes, I think that's of among proclamations of love, the Big Bart Mr. Miracle one is the tops.
Does – I think it beats It's Bears because it's a better Garth Ennis quote than It's Bears. I don't know if it beats I Don't Need a Jetpack, All I Need Is Hate.
It definitely doesn't beat the Thing quote.
Right, so are we saying under the Marvel 2-in-1 quote or under the Punisher 2099 quote?
I'll leave it to you. You don't think it beats the Punisher 2099 quote?
Let's put it above it. Let's put it above it.
Okay, yeah, let's pick love over hate this time. Okay, this one comes from Lucas, and these are Doom and Doom Adjace quotations.
Ooh, Doom Adjace.
This is from FF number 9. Fire. You'd try to kill me with fire? Folly. I have burned before. The world be damned. Doom endures.
We can cut that one down.
I don't think it even makes the list. It's too wordy. And we have similar...
You don't think the world be damned, doom endures makes the list?
Actually, that is pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah. We have another like similar Doom quote though.
We've got, you know, we've had people telling us that they are now hearing, like whenever they read certain quotes from comics, they hear it in our voices, which I think is fun.
Yeah.
Like just imagine reading Batman RIP and suddenly Batman has a southern accent for one panel. Far from impossible.
Far from impossible.
I don't know. I don't see a lot of Doom quotes on here.
I thought we had one, but okay. I don't think it beats Darkseid Is. The world be damned, Doom endures is not better than Darkseid Is.
No. The only other Dr. Doom quote we have on here is, I was a god, Valeria. I found it beneath me.
Yeah, that's the one. Okay. Is this better than that?
No, it's not better than that.
Okay. Where do we put it then?
I would put it just above the Secret Wars 1 Punisher quote. I would put it, Secret Wars number 1, I should say. I would put it just below No More Mr. Knife Guy.
That's fine with me. Okay, the next one is from Avengers World, Volume 1, Number 15. I will make everything right, for I am not a simple do-gooder. I am Doom. I say that one's a no.
That's a no. That's a pass. Soft
and
pass.
Soft pass. And then the last one we already have, Where's My Money, Honey?
That's a good one.
It is a good solid one. It is on the list.
Dude, that's gonna that can't happen on Netflix Defenders until they get the FF rights back.
Yeah, that's true. All right, we're doing one more list. This may be the last one we ever do. I know this means that we're going to leave some unread, and I apologize to everyone who we missed in the Word Heavyweight Champion segment. If there is demand for it, we may end up figuring out a way to bring it back somehow. This one is from True Drek, okay? The first quote we're going to rank somewhere, Godzilla got busy.
That's from Godzilla vs. Barkley number 1.
It sure is.
A comic that I think Mike Barron wrote under an assumed name. One of those was written under an assumed name. One of those was an Alan Smithy joint, I think. But yeah, Godzilla Got Busy is... That's solid.
It is very solid.
Because, like, that whole comic is... Like, that whole comic is... It's everything you want out of that comic, you know? So that's definitely better than Face It Tiger. You just hit the jackpot, right?
Where do we have Face It Tiger? Is it near the bottom?
No, Face It Tiger, You Just Hit the Jackpot is number 32 on the list currently.
Okay. I think it goes above that JLA Hitman quote. I don't think it goes above You Shouldn't Have Signed It.
Yeah, that's the one that people hear in your voice, by the way.
I'll take it.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's put Godzilla Got Busy right there at number 31.
Okay. It's a nice piece of work, Kingpin. You shouldn't have signed it. Okay, this is another good one. This is from WWE Superstars number 9. Stone Cold Steve Austin says this.
Okay.
I'm going to try to do it in an Austin voice. Robots, pirates, Hulk Hogan in paradise. I ain't impressed with a thing.
All right. Look, if Spider-Man had said that, it would be number 1 on the list.
Yeah.
If Spider-Man had said that, it would be on t-shirts. Like, Stone Cold saying it is pretty good, though.
Yeah.
That definitely makes the list.
Yeah.
I was going to be so mad about this. We've talked about how this list is a reflection of our tastes. It does not get more reflective of our tastes than that.
You're right.
Where do you think that one goes, Matt?
I think it goes above Not Enough Gun.
I think you're right. I feel like it goes above Dark Side Hated Music. I would put it up 20 spots higher.
I don't think so.
Fine.
The last one on True's list is, I'll admit, if I were a gorilla and got superpowers, I'd probably want to exact revenge on humans, too. That is Robin.
That is spoken by Robin in Jiro Kuwata's Bat Manga.
You're right.
No, we currently have a Bat Manga quote at number 3 of all time.
That Bat Manga quote is fantastic.
No, it's perfect. It's perfect. But, like, this one is also pretty good because, first of all, you don't usually see Batman and Robin sympathizing with the villains. Like, Poison Ivy and Mr. Freeze, but you don't really see them sympathizing with a certain caliber of villain. And Professor Gorilla, Robin's like, I gotta say, I can see where he's coming from. Like, that would never be said about Mr. Zazz. Deadshot?
Well, you know,
Robin's not gonna sympathize with Deadshot.
Well, he was a gorilla. imprisoned by humans, exacting revenge. I can sympathize as well. Okay, does it make the list and where?
Yeah. Do you sympathize with, do you identify with Professor Gorilla, Matt?
Look, I don't know that I would do what he did, but I can see why he did it.
Fair. That's very fair. So where are we going to put it? Where are we going to put it?
I mean, it's not the Lord Deathman quote by any stretch.
No, it is not Batman talking about how he resurrected himself from death with the strength of righteousness. No, it is not. But it's pretty solid. Now, I think it definitely goes above nobody dies, it's a rule. But I don't think it goes above the Ray Smuckles quote that's right above that about Todd.
Okay, let's put it there. And that's it, folks. That is the World Heavyweight Champions. We have our list of 100. Hopefully it will be finalized on the site very soon. I think we got to decide what happens with the bottom quotes, like what drops off.
So, I think we're going to have to end up installing Wrestling's a Sport, the only true sport, at number 100, which would knock off the only quote we have on here from Saga.
Well, sorry, Saga. Maybe next time.
Maybe next time you'll be more about pro wrestling, Saga.
That's right. You can't send us any more World Heavyweight Champions lists unless somehow we resurrect it. But if you would like to send us listener questions, every story ever lists, have a suggestion for next year's segment, or if you want to send us categories for the Gordy Awards, which we're going to be doing at the start of 2016, you can do that at our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is also where you can let us know if you want to sponsor the show. Also, be sure to check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, read show notes, leave comments, and download the show. Check us out on iTunes. If you like the show and you want to leave us a good review on iTunes, that would be very helpful to us. It would help us get featured more and get the show in front of more people, which would be great. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places that you can find us on the internet. For me, all you have to do is go to about.me/MattDWilson, and you will find links to all my stuff. Chris, where can people find links to your stuff?
Everybody can find links to my stuff at about.me/ChrisSims. That's ChrisSims. There's links there to Twitter, Tumblr, Comics Alliance, and Comixology, where there's a bunch of comics that I've written. Dracula the Unconquered, number 3, I think we can go ahead and confirm, coming soon. After a almost 4-year wait, three and a half, I think, is what we're going to end up with. But it will be up soon. And hey, if you enjoy this show and you have not already checked out Movie Fighters, I gotta say, I think this week's episode of Movie Fighters, the latest one, where we watch Saving Christmas, is the best episode we've done ever of Movie Fighters. If you want to hear us losing our minds over the events of a Kirk Cameron film, check that one out. It's a really fun time. Next week, everybody, I cannot believe it. We actually had to stop the recording and check. It's the 7th annual War Rocket Ajax War on Christmas Spectacular. If you're a longtime listener, you know what that means. You know who our guest is going to be. You know that Matt and I are going to be exchanging presents. I don't know if we've decided what exactly we're going to do. We have certainly had a suggestion, and I don't know if we want to go through that again. But do not miss it. Christmas specials are always a blast. You can check out all of our previous Christmas specials in the archives, including the Worst Christmas mixtape ever, where Maggie Sirota joined us. Last year we did a commentary track for Die Hard. check those out. Please enjoy them and be here next week. The 7th annual War Rocket Ajax Christmas special is coming up. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you then. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yeah! Flash.